Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Renee. All right, you want to try it again?
Hi, you're on the Think Inclusive podcast, and this is Renee Marquez with ParEducate.
Fantastic. Hey, everybody. This is Tim Villegas, your host of the Think Inclusive podcast. I would like to... welcome, finally, after all the technical difficulties, Renee Marquez, co-founder of ParEducate. She is a graduate of the University of Southern California School of Architecture. She has worked as a ParEducator since 2003 with the same district in California. Previous to being a ParEducator, Renee has worked for several government agencies and education groups. Renee currently spends her work days modifying curriculum, collecting data, and investigating technology for students. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Renee.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tim.
Fantastic. Okay, so we were just talking before we officially started recording. We have never had a conversation other than online. So this is fantastic.
Yeah, no, everything's always been about... When you and I have previously been together, everything's been about like trying to support teachers or getting curriculum out or trying to figure out how to branch into the administrative level to make them understand what inclusion is. But you and I, when we first started, it actually when ParEducate started at the same time, almost the same time as Think Inclusive, we were about the boots on the ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I think it's been great to see how ParEducate has grown and that we're still doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. So, you know, many of our listeners and readers are familiar with your name, at least Renee or ParEducate. But I'm not sure if many of them know what you do or what ParEducate does, because I know that you do have some resources and books that are available, and also you do training. So why don't you just fill us in on what ParEducate is, and we can go from there.
So in 2011, one of my coworkers left to spend quality time with her then 1-year-old son. And my department went into basically a tailspin because we couldn't replicate Megan. Megan Gross is amazing. And then there was this conversation about, well, what happens when Renee goes? We definitely can't clone Renee. And at the time, had only been a paraeducator for 8 years. And it's not something I thought I was going to go in and do for like a career or build off of this. It's not something people think about, really. It's that gap filler job. So we started writing this book called Paraeducate to help give paraeducators the same footing that everybody else did, to give them some basic background knowledge that a lot of districts just don't have the time to give to their paraeducators. There are a lot of districts that don't call paraeducators paraeducators. Some of them are instructional assistants. Some are paraprofessionals. And just trying to get that base level to everybody to help provide inclusive environments for students with disabilities. Out of that, we realized that we had been creating for the better part of almost 10 years at that point, curriculum and other supports for students with disabilities. And through Paraeducate, we were able to offer that to a variety of people. And so now we have, we still have our book Paraeducate on Amazon, both digitally and available in paperback. And we have a variety of books that are primarily for curriculum modification or curriculum adaptations to be used as is in classrooms.
So the book that you originally wrote, and I think I remember when the book first came out, something that we said about it was that it assumed an inclusive environment. Whereas, you know, as you know, it still isn't. Inclusive environments in public school, just they're just not that common, especially for students with more complex needs or significant intellectual disabilities. So are you seeing where, you know, from your vantage point, that it's gotten better, maybe in California or, you know, with the people that you work with, or is it pretty much the same?
It's a state by state phenomena, unfortunately, and it becomes a district by district phenomena. It's getting better, but unfortunately, what I see a lot on social media are all these mentions of places that I will not say directly, all relating to particular states that have these horrendous outcomes because they haven't had inclusive environments, or there's such a segregated population for whatever reason. Some of them can be honestly, inherently, they started out as good ideas. But just because of the segregated population, things have turned out badly, or even in an inclusive environment, things have turned out badly. And it does sometimes take a little bit of bad publicity to get the right things going, unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah, I hear that. It bothers me a little bit when I hear educators say that inclusion doesn't work because of the barriers. So because, well, the teachers didn't want to teach the students, or the district wasn't ready to do something like that, and it was implemented badly. So when I hear that, I hear, well, you know, you never actually had inclusion. You had something that maybe they were trying to get at, but because of implementation, it failed, you know. And I think teachers are and district administration, they're worried that if they do something like that, then those negative consequences.
There's very small things. Like, I'll come across a teacher who will have successfully included many students, but because of the nature of inclusion, like when tests come up, the students get misplaced during the testing process for the classroom test because I have 12 kids with IEPs. I don't know where that student's test is because it could be in the resource room. It could be in the library. It could be in their backpack. And I'm trying to service as a classroom teacher 12 different students and their 12 different needs. Now I feel this is failing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a true failure necessarily. It's just a hurdle.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the inclusion in the broadest sense, or even if you take it down to, you know, you want to have students spending 80% of their day outside of a segregated or self-contained environment, you know, nothing's going to work perfectly, you know? So I think that the assumption though, that certain students shouldn't, or that don't belong because of a particular disability label, I think that's really the biggest thing that I know that we are trying to say no, like that's just because a student has Down syndrome or autism or, you know, whatever, doesn't mean that they need to be in a particular place. Like that's not the reason. So if we're looking at special places, let's have a different conversation. The other thing that I find people think when I say, or we say, inclusion or inclusive education is that all students are educated with all students with disabilities are educated in general education classrooms 100% of the time. And so I think that that's a misunderstanding. I'm not sure, you know, we've never had this conversation before, so I'm not sure how nuanced your take is on this.
So my regular day job primarily has me working with students who fall in the end of the spectrum from moderate to severe disabilities. Mm-hmm. The majority of my students, based on my case management load, are in inclusion or included in their general ed classes with their peers 75% of their day. And this includes some of the stuff is, yes, my speech and language can come in and push in classes, but they're not necessarily going to push in class where, like, art class or PE, classes that are very hard to have that dialogue with a student.
Mm-hmm.
Actually have a student for the first time right now that I'm learning to work with, that inclusion does look very different than what we've had it previously in a very, very long time. It's uncomfortable. Really, honestly, it is. But it's in the better interest of the student long term. Right now, but the eventual goal would be more inclusion over that student's day.
Sure. But I think what I'm hearing you say is that you really need to look at the student's needs.
Well, that's the whole point of the IEP.
Right. Right. And so what I tell people too is, look, I cannot make and just wave a magic wand and say, okay, everyone is in general ed for 100% of the day, no matter what, because that's denying kids FAPE. Me making that decision and saying that that's how kids are being served, that, you know, that is against the whole idea of an individualized education program. The idea of it is to look at a student and what that student requires and what services they require. Now, of course, services are portable and they can be provided anywhere, but you also have to take a look at, is that student going to be successful in that specific location? So it is all part of it. And to say everyone's in or everyone's out, I think that is too simplistic of a way. It's much more nuanced. And like you said, you have to take a look at you know, what the student requires. And
it would be, if mass also matters to the service as well. I have met wonderful APE and PT folks, but at the same time, you know, getting a student out of their wheelchair, even though it may be appropriate because it's a physical activity, may not necessarily be safe at the moment, because you'll know it, the fire alarm could go off and trying to get that student back in to their chair under emergency circumstances may not be a great idea.
Right. Right. I think we all just need to be very thoughtful, you know, about how we provide the service, whatever it is and wherever it is. Because I take what I hear from, you know, the parents who either talk to me specifically or who comment on, you know, our Facebook posts or getting emails or, you know, however. And I think one of the biggest ways that school districts and educators can build trust with parents is just to know that we are thinking about what is best and not making decisions beforehand. You know, not only is that illegal to make IEP decisions before a meeting or, you know, anything like that, but just to be able to be thoughtful about how we are going to be providing services for this student, and whether that's academic or whether that is, you know, if you have a student with physical or medical needs, how those are going to be provided. I think that goes a long way. I'm not sure what the tone is, you know, in your neck of the woods, as far as why parents and families get upset at school districts because of, you know, whatever reason. But I think that tends to be a universal thing.
Well, that's kind of one of the beauties of being a paraeducator. You are pretty, by default, you're pretty much insulated from that. You might hear edges of it, of parental scuttlebutt, but specifically as to why, sometimes you just don't know. And there are a lot of reasons parents can be upset. I can't comment on most of them because I don't get to have that sort of relationship with the parents. My end is having those conversations between the general ed teacher, the case manager, and as appropriate, the student. And I can tell you that if a student only says yes to everything you ever ask them, that conversation is going to be very short.
Right.
There's occasional one was no, but mostly yes.
Well, let's talk about being prepared to move kids into more inclusive environments. And the students that you work with and the teachers, the paraeducators that you work with, how do you prepare them to do what is needed, whether it's modifications or it's, you know, help with communication? How do you prepare them for going into more inclusive environments?
Well, I am fortunate. My district is considered mostly inclusive. Kids have been included since pre-K straight through to secondary. So the hurdles of getting students prepared specifically already have been in place. So there are more background things that need to be put in place, such as pulling together vocabulary specific to units or classroom language that providing for students who need speech boards or other communication devices. So that would be probably the primary way I'd be preparing a student. But as for preparing our paraeducators, we kind of kick them out the door and say, you can do it because we believe in you. And we try to pair at least one class, a veteran and someone who's not had that many experiences in a classroom, just so they can get an idea of how to move between students with disabilities and their general ed peers, being mindful of the students who have less obvious disabilities, to not just single them out and hover near them, how to broach conversations with general ed teachers of what does it mean, what is it going to look like when we have this student do this activity, or science class. Okay, all the other kids are making these wonderful rock cycle CD covers, and the student that I work with does not have any connection to music, let alone a CD that no longer exists in their world. Can he still go through and build his own rock cycle poster and just forget the musical component to it? And just being able to like observe students, figure out what the classroom teacher is asking of them, and being honest about the parts that the student with a disability can provide and demonstrate to their classroom teacher.
Right. So I hear that a lot of the modifications, is it left up to the paraeducator, or is it in conjunction with the special education case manager as far as what modifications go on in a classroom?
So in the ideal world, it should be the classroom teacher and the case manager, and with a reference to the paraeducator, because even if the classroom teacher is really great and really wants to get to know the student, ultimately, at some point, it will be my job to help that student through, either through study hall or through a pull out, or to explain to parent because it's part of homework.
Mm-hmm.
Reality has actually gotten a lot better. More teachers I'm seeing are coming in that are able to address specific needs of students with disabilities, but they're better at mild to moderate and not so much the severe end. And that is a challenge, but there's technically less students with severe disabilities. I mean, with more language barriers based on being nonverbal to go around. So that's just the nature of exposure to students with disabilities.
Right. Right. So what do you think?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, because coming from the perspective of of an inclusive district already, do you still see that there are barriers to inclusion even in that setting?
Yeah, there is a lot of it's a lot of organization on part of the general ed teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just my job to know all the students who I'm responsible for helping or prodding in the academic direction. We're also addressing students with emotional and trauma needs, probably at a different rate than when we have been in the past 15 mm-hmm. years. And I don't necessarily know that it's because we've become a trauma-informed district. It's honestly that number of students who have those needs are showing up. The classroom has become immensely complex, and I feel for general ed teachers. It is very easy for me to sit back and quarterback in the room, armchair quarterback in the room, and go, well, I wouldn't do it that way. But I also don't always have all the information on every single student. I only have the information on the students in which I support.
Right. Yeah. Do you get general ed teachers, or I'm not sure exactly how your organizational structure is, but do you collaborate with general ed teachers, or is it more you collaborate with a special ed case manager, and then that's how you work with the students?
Oh, it's all because we're inclusion. So our students are already in the class and they already have a seat in the classroom. Mm-hmm. The instructions do come from the classroom teacher. And so I'll look at the assignment, and if it's not appropriate or if it's too much work for the students that I support, I'll go back and talk to the general ed teacher and say, can we try something like this instead?
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, if I'm really stuck in a bind, I'll go back into my digital archives. I'll pull out something and print it out, run it by the teacher, and say, this is more appropriate for this student, and provide it to them. But I've got a lot of teachers who actually do now understand how to do that. And are aware enough that when they make an assignment, they're making several different varieties of this assignment for all the different students in their classroom.
Do you have a go-to kind of basket of analog tools, you know, that you use to modify curriculum or assignment? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, examples of some things that are in there.
So highlighters. What mm-hmm. I'm going to go through is I might not necessarily highlight instructions for some students, but I'll highlight words that might help them find the vocabulary in their textbook, or I might find words that they would find in their notes. To help them start associating things like that. I will partner up with a couple of kids, usually general ed kids, in the same zone as my student, and I'll teach them how to mark text. That's an AVID method. Are you familiar with AVID?
I am familiar with AVID. I never specifically used or taught with it, but I know barely. What it is.
Marking the text would be you'd get all the students would get a handout of a specific reading the class will be doing together. Marking the text has a few phases that gets them to interact with the text. The first step would be to go through and number all the paragraphs. Then the next thing would be to just do a cold read of the reading. And that's usually considered an independent activity. But if I get involved with three or four students, I might read it to them, even if they're capable of reading. And just to mask so my student can start hearing the words that are in the reading.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step would be to go back through and read again, this time in 2 to 3 paragraph chunks. And we're going to start underlining or highlighting either vocabulary words we don't know or vocabulary words we think are important. And this is where it's really nice to have 2 or 3 different colors, because then you could leave that itself a key towards the top to help identify and to help get the students thinking about the topic. So they'll be able to refer to, hey, in paragraph 12, they used this word differently than they used it in paragraph 6. Now, a student with a disability may not necessarily pick up with that, but then they can refer to the reading as their peers are reading it and having this discussion around them and be able to at least make a note of that. So, yeah, pens, highlighters are pretty much big.
Okay. What else?
The cheap whiteboard. So you could get a high quality, actually. Binder slip. So they make these little plastic sleeves that can go into binders, and they're clear. So you you buy a pack of them for like 300 at Costco or something, and they usually tend to be pretty good. You slide a piece of white paper or even binder paper in them, and you can write on this board as a whiteboard with a whiteboard marker. And that could help students who just need someone to scribe for them. So they'll write somewhere else in their own handwriting.
Right. Yeah. I like that. You can also do that where if it's just some sort of other worksheet, you can slip it in there and they can use that dry erase marker.
Yeah. If it's a student who is identifying letters and it's not a critical reading or the reading is so dense, just pick out a few letters or even pick out a few keywords and have them go circle those words.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So we've got some pens, highlighters, different colors, and then the clear, sheets to put the paper
in. That's what it's called. I had to go look for the box. I knew it was going to work.
Anything else?
I actually am a pretty big fan of the iPad. There's an app out there called MathMod. And it's basically graph paper, and it has all these symbols built in, mathematical symbols. It stops around early trig in terms of mathematical symbols, but it helps students keep things aligned, and that's a really big deal in the middle to late early secondary program. So from like about fifth through about eighth grade, it's really, like, mathematically speaking, if you misalign a number, your math equation will be off. But MathMod helps students with that and keep things aligned, but gives them enough space to work on. That's just for writing, like, direct equations, not necessarily for graphing, unfortunately.
Okay, that's a good tip, though. I like that. I haven't heard of MathMod.
Yeah.
So speaking of technology, are there any other pieces of technology that you have found extremely useful as far as, you know, helping with either modifying curriculum, like you said, for, you know, math or maybe communication? I know that's something else that people ask all the time is, you know, what are you using and, you know, can I try it in the classroom?
I mean, just having access to either Google Suite or Office is pretty important. I've actually carried a laptop around with me. Fortunately, in the past 3 years, our district has finally ponied up and bought more laptops, so I can take one out of one of the classrooms and bring it with me to class. And so I had a student working on an assignment that was modified, making slides, Google Slides, for this assignment instead. And one of the things I had him do was actually then take the Chromebook out, and his job was to figure out how to use the Chromebook camera and take pictures of rocks around campus, which there were actually surprisingly a lot in the different varieties on campus.
Yeah, that's a great idea to have a student go with if they do need that support, that additional support with a paraeducator, to have the paraeducator have that technology with them to assist the student. I think that that's a great, so, you know, it's actually a really simple suggestion, but I don't think many people think that. So that's a great example. I like that.
Yeah. You also have to have someone who is able to handle the conversation with the student of, okay, this is how we're going to use this piece of technology. It's not just to look up Disneyland trips.
Right. Right. Yeah. There needs to be some sort of, the skill set needs to be there for sure. But that's great. I like that a lot. What advice we get this a lot is just moving inclusion forward wherever you are. So, you know, we have a lot of teachers who ask us, how they can move inclusion forward where they are. And we also have parents, but as an educator, a paraeducator, but as an educator, where you are, what would be some, maybe a specific thing that someone can do to move inclusion forward where they're at?
To be mindful that all the activities that are provided to the students are activities that all the students should be participating in, even if it's just for a little while. So mm-hmm. at secondary, the big thing is rallies. And for students with sensory needs, a rally is a nightmare.
Yeah.
But this is also time to be with their peers, to look around and be a part of a rally, no matter how long. So for some students, we've been utterly surprised that they've been fine, that nothing bothers them. They enjoy being in the rally. For other students, it's not about making the call of, hey, let's pull them out. It's making the call of, what is our plan? Here is a plan that you can tell someone, I want to leave, when the rally gets too much for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really understanding that's in place.
Yeah.
Instead of, hey, you're not going to the rally.
Right. Instead of making that decision for them, saying, oh, they can't handle this, you know, give them a way to indicate that it is too much for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great advice. Well, I want to thank you for being on the podcast and for having this conversation. Before we sign off, could you tell us where they can find more information about you and Paraeducate and the resources that you have to offer?
So every Thursday during the academic school year between August and May, you can find a weekly blog from us at blog.paraeducate.com. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Paraeducate. And all of our books are available on Amazon. So if you looked us up as an author, Paraeducate, you'd find us there.
Awesome. Awesome. And props to you for putting out a weekly blog, because I'm telling you, I've tried and it is so hard.
Some weeks I think I've hit it the nail on the head, and other weeks I feel like it's being phoned in, and then those are the ones I get the most comments of how brilliant this was, and it frightens me sometimes.
Right.
We're actually in the middle of a series right now of teaching people in high school how to talk a student through writing an essay, modified or not. So we'll look more about that when we get back next week.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I think maybe we're just all overthinking it, right?
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That is our show. We would like to thank Renee Marquez for being a guest on the Think Inclusive podcast. Make sure to follow them on Twitter and Facebook, as well as on their website, paraeducate.com. Follow Think Inclusive on the web at thinkinclusive.us, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and Instagram. You can subscribe to the Think Inclusive podcast via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or Anchor.fm, the easiest way to start a podcast. If you're using the Anchor app to listen, please leave us a voice message. You may be featured on our next podcast. You can also favorite us and or use the applause button while listening to the show. We love to know that you are listening. Also, a reminder that you can support the Think Inclusive podcast via Patreon or Anchor.fm with a monthly contribution so that we can continue to bring you in-depth interviews with thought leaders in inclusive education and community advocacy. Thank you to Patreon Donna L. for their continued support for the podcast. From Marietta, Georgia, please join us again on the Think Inclusive podcast. Thanks for your time and attention.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.